You, the jailer said. On your feet. Jump to it. John the lawyer woke up out of a dream in which he was suing the creator of all things for product liability, and opened his eyes.
What?
Your lucky day, the jailer said. You're going home.
An icicle pierced John's heart. Now, just a minute. Let's not be too hasty.
Out.
And 10 minutes later he was, bathed in harsh, unfamiliar sunshine, and cursing fluently under his breath, as the sentries lifted their crossed spears to let him pass. As he started off down the long road to the forest, he heard a ghastly shriek directly overhead, and instinctively ducked as a huge flying creature shot through the sky, briefly blotting out the sun before dwindling, arrow-swift, into a dot on the far horizon. Maybe he imagined it, but he was sure he heard the echo of a woman's wailing voice carried back to him on the breeze. The ghost of a plea to, for pity's sake, slow down, the last dying susurration of bad language. He slicked back his hair, which had been ruffled by the slipstream, and trudged onwards. If optimism and pessimism are defined in terms of glasses half empty and half full, John was a dry martini. He blended the harsh gin of realism with 6 parts of the rich, sweet vermouth of hope, and if he ever considered it, revelled in the contradiction. Thus he knew in his heart of hearts that even with the time he'd spent in King Drain's dungeons, he hadn't clocked up enough billable hours this month to meet his target and avoid the sack. But the month still had one day to go, and who knew what that day might hold? Answer, 24 hours maximum, and the shortfall in his hours was 27. But the realms are a strange place, teeming with dark and gorgeous wonders. There were caves under the mountains and dappled glades under the marshmallow trees, where time was reputed to stand still. If he happened across one of them, and managed to find someone to sue while he was there, he'd be laughing. Intriguing to find a human at the dwarvish court. Humans and dwarves didn't mix much, outside of business dealings. The reason why was, of course, implicit in everyday speech. You look up to people you fear and respect, elves, say, and down on those you despise and, well, belittle. The fact that a dwarvish 5-year-old could arm wrestle a 6-foot human into blubbering submission, or carry a sack of coal that humans would need a cart for, was neither here nor there. Dwarves were short, therefore inferior and funny. One of John's daydreams was being instructed by the heirs of Snorin in a class action against the whole of humanity, for defamation and aggravated looming. He stopped in a small glade of willow, beside a silvery brook, sat down on a big rock and took off his shoe. As he suspected, the sole had worn through. Time for a new pair, except maybe this wasn't a good time for major capital expenditure, if he was going to get fired from Thanduil and Gluvian. On the other hand, if he lost his job, he'd need to find a new one, which meant interviews, for which it's essential to look smart, well-dressed, and prosperous. He put his hand in his pocket and came up with 4 silver pennies and a goblin's lottle. Awkward. And then he caught sight of something that made him think, "Whoa there, steady on." For on the bank of the quicksilver stream, in the middle of a patch of grass gilded by bars of sunlight lancing through the overhanging trees, he saw a pair of shiny black boots, practically new, just lying there. Did he just do that? A wishing grove, maybe, where all you have to do is ask and it shall be given to you. 1,000,000 gold florins, he thought, hopefully, and waited. Nothing happened. Oh, well. The boots, however, looked to be just his size. He hopped up, scampered over, and grabbed the nearest boot. It was so heavy he could barely lift it. Then it kicked him in the chest. He toppled backwards and sat down in the brook. He was soaking wet, but hadn't even noticed. All his attention was fixed on the boots, which were moving. They were, not to put too fine a point on it, scrambling to their feet. "Do you mind?" said a voice. It was high, faint, cracked, and somehow far away, and in it John could hear unquenchable malice, endless sadness, and distinct annoyance. "You're a wraith," he said. A black cloak appeared from behind a thorn bush, swirled briefly in the air, and settled to define a humanoid shape. Unseen hands lifted a hood and pulled it into place. "What of it? What were you doing?" "Sunbathing, if you must know." "With your boots on?" "My feet burn easily." "Look," the voice added irritably, "I don't need to explain myself to you, thank you very much. And leave my stuff alone, all right?" John shook his head. "Wraiths don't sunbathe." "How would you know?"
"A valid point, actually."
"They just don't. They're creatures of shadow and darkness who abhor the sunlight. Everybody knows that."
"Bigot."
A twig bent sideways, then relaxed. "First you help yourself to my stuff, then you insult me."
Sorry, John said quickly. "Obviously I don't know very much about wraiths, and no offence intended."
"Fine. Now, would you mind turning round, please?"
"What?
Why?"
"Because," said the voice, "I'm about to put my bra and knickers on, so, if you wouldn't mind."
John turned red as a beetroot and spun round so fast he nearly fell over.
Yes, we do exist, you know."
"I thought it was just men."
"Yes, well, you would."
"All right, you can turn round again now."
John stayed where he was. "I really don't mean to be offensive," he said. "The truth is, you're the first wraith I've ever met."
"There's a surprise."
"Don't be like that," John said, and slowly turned round.
The black cloak was closed again, but a brightly coloured silk scarf shot up like a firework from behind a fallen log, and wound itself round an invisible neck.
"It's all come as a bit of a shock, that's all. That's probably why I keep putting my foot in it. My name's John, by the way. John the lawyer."
"Charmed, I'm sure. And now I really think I ought to be going."
The hood turned, first left, then right, then left again.
"All right," the voice said icily. "What have you done with it?"
"What?"
"My horse. Where is it?"
"What horse?"
A sigh that seemed to come from deep inside his own soul. "Yes, all right, I know. Let's all go and rag on the wraith. Out of sight, she won't mind.
All terribly amusing, and let me assure you I'm grinning all over my face. But can I please have my horse back now? I'm late as it is.
I haven't seen any horse, John protested. Honest.
Did you just say honest?
Yes.
What did you say your name was?
John sighed. Now look who's doing the stereotypes. I would never, ever steal a horse. Never.
You tried to take my boots?
I thought they were empty.
Sure, and you were going to walk a mile in them just so you could understand me better.
The black cloak seemed to slump a little.
You haven't seen my horse, then?
No.
Sorry. Bloody things probably wandered off somewhere. Wouldn't be the first time.
Would you like me to help you look for it? The hood swayed from side to side.
It'll be back in the black stable by now, eating its head off. Which means I'll have to walk. Sod it.
Where are you headed?
The tip of the hood dipped southeast.
Me too, John said.
Mind if I walk with you?
Suit yourself, as the tailor said to the mirror.
John blinked.
Did you just make a...
Yes, we do that too.
Gosh.
It was mildly disconcerting, walking along beside an animated cloak. But John decided he didn't really mind.
So, he said, how long have you been a wraith?
Why?
He shrugged.
Just curious. I couldn't actually say,
the voice replied.
Since about the middle of the First Age, I think. I don't know how long that is in years. I sort of lost count after 20,000.
You're over 20,000 years old?
At least.
You don't look it, John managed to stop himself saying, just in time.
I'm 26, he said.
There now. Actually, once you got used to it, the voice wasn't unpleasant at all.
So, he went on, you work for King Mordak.
He's the Dark Lord of the Wraiths these days, so yes, suppose I do.
Though I'm not what you'd call exactly front line. More sort of support and administrative.
Ah,
personnel management, that sort of thing. In human resources.
That must be an interesting job.
Not really, no,
said the voice, as a gust of wind lifted the skirt of the black cloak, revealing the tops of the empty boots.
So it's just as well there's so little of it to do. Mostly I just loaf around and amuse myself.
Fair enough, John said. I'm not sure it'd suit me, but each to their own.
Fact is, the voice went on, I seem to spend most of my time shopping. I know it sounds awful, but I really do like clothes.
Well, you would.
Sorry, was that an insensitive remark?
The shoulders of the cloak rose and fell.
Don't see why. Of course, I've got to wear all this tatty old rubbish for work, but that's no reason why I shouldn't pamper myself a bit in my free time.
Why not? John said.
Live a little.
So, what's King Mordak really like? I've never met him, but he sounds, well, different for a Dark Lord.
I've never met him either, said the voice. He doesn't seem to hang around admin much, for some odd reason. It's just conceivable, I suppose, that he might have more important things to do. Ouch, added the voice. Stone in my boot, it explained. A lean on me, if you like. A better not. Frostbite.
Ah.
So the black cloak sort of folded itself on the ground, and the boot separated itself, waggled about in the air, then went back the way it came. I hate walking, said the voice. There are some species who do it for fun, but that's just weird. Both boots were back on the ground, their toe caps visible under the black hem. I hope that stupid horse does find its way back home. I'll be in ever so much trouble if it gets lost. Oh? The thing is, the voice said diffidently, I'm not really supposed to borrow horses from the black stable, and especially not for shopping. They're reserved for the executive grades and above. I'm just junior admin.
John nodded. Because you're a female, presumably. Typical.
No, because I'm younger than everyone else in the department, and promotion is strictly on an undead men's shoes basis. Think about it, she added. And John said,
Oh.
Quite. There are times when I'm tempted to pack in the service and get a job in, well, you know.
The voice was silent for a moment.
The world.
I see. Doing what?
Well, no. No, it'll sound silly.
Try me.
What I always wanted to do, said the voice, ever since I was a little girl, was modelling.
Ah. Sigh.
I told you it was silly.
Not a bit of it, John said briskly. You can be whatever you want to be. It's just that some things take an extra little bit of determination and resolve.
Oh, I've got those.
Well, then, there you are.
John thought hard for a moment.
Here's what you do. You get 2 dozen eggs and some flour and a quart of milk.
Yuck.
Well, it works for fish,
John said vaguely.
No. Maybe you're right. We're coming at this from the wrong angle. I mean, what's the actual purpose of a model?
To show the clothes off, I guess.
Exactly. You can do that better than anybody. No distractions. All the emphasis will be on the garments, not the person inside them.
I think the distraction is the whole point, actually, but it's sweet of you to suggest it.
How about paint?
I'm allergic to linseed oil.
They crossed another brook and started the long uphill climb to the eaves of the forest.
So, said the voice, what about you? There aren't many human lawyers.
Only because the elves won't give us a break. There's no reason why a human shouldn't be just as devious and sly and money-grubbing if he gets the chance.
Hmm.
The gradient didn't seem to bother the contents of the black cloak. John found himself having to trot to keep up, which wasn't easy.
Personally, I'd say an invisible model stood a better chance than a human lawyer.
There you are, then. My point exactly.
You're doing well, then. Soaring ahead in your chosen profession.
Well, no, John confessed. Actually, I'm that close to getting fired. But I'll bounce back, you'll see.
When they throw you out, you'll bounce,
Quite possibly. Depends on whether you land on a hard surface.
I'll get another job. Or, better still.
Suddenly, the thought welled up inside him, like violet-flavoured acid reflux.
I'll set up on my own. Start my own firm. Rent a little hut somewhere, a second-hand desk, couple of chairs, that's all you need.
And customers?
Not a problem, he said cheerfully,
though he had no idea where they might possibly come from. It didn't seem to matter. Of course there'd be clients, queues of them halfway down the street. All he had to do was want it, and it had happened. Tell all your friends, special discount for members of the transparent community. The voice laughed.
All right then, it's a deal. You can come and watch me on the catwalk. I'll come and listen to you in court.
I'm serious.
Of course you are.
Ahead of them loomed the tall, high pines that grew on the fringes of the forest. The border of Elvenholm. Here the road forked. To the left it plunged into the deep valley where grew the towering oak trees in whose upper branches the lawyers built their offices, while the right path skirted the edge of the forest and came out at the entrance to the Mal Orn shopping centre. At the last possible point before the division, they stopped, and for a long moment neither of them spoke.
Well, said the voice, be seeing you.
John stopped. An indescribable and unfamiliar melancholy swept over him, as though he just realized he was out of time for serving a request for further and better particulars. With the sorrow, however, came a sort of reckless daring.
Now, listen to me, he said. I meant it. If you want something badly enough, you'll find a way, I promise you. But not paint or batter.
You'll think of something. The voice laughed.
I can't kiss you, it said, because if I do, your lips will fall off and shatter like crockery. But you're very sweet.
He watched the black cloak until it merged with the shadows under the trees, which didn't take very long. Then he shook himself like a wet dog and turned left.